Welcome to the Making the List podcast with Alyssa Dare Nelson. If you want to learn the secrets to build a successful, sustainable, fast-growing business, this is the podcast for you. Each week, you'll hear incredible stories and get actionable tips and advice from CEOs who've led their companies to the Inc. 5000. Do you want to join them in making the list? Then let's go. And now, here's Alyssa Dare Nelson.
Well, hey there, and welcome to episode 8 of the Making the List podcast. This episode was recorded pre-COVID, but the wisdom in this episode could not be more appropriate for the times that we're facing right now. Let me tell you just a little bit about our guest today. Our guest today is Rich Anderson. Rich is the CEO of Imagine IT. Rich is a visionary type A entrepreneur with a background in accounting, mergers and acquisitions, and social development. He's also a black belt in Taekwondo, a former mobile DJ, and a husband and a father. When he's not working, you might find him on a nearby mountain bike trail or hundreds of miles away, riding a motorcycle or driving the family motorhome. Rich's wisdom today will be something that you can hang on to through this tough time. He's gone through lots of ups and downs in his business, so learn what you can today. I can't wait to hear what you think. Well, hey, Rich, thank you so much for joining me here on the Making the List podcast. How are you today? Are you as excited about this conversation as I am?
I don't know that anyone could be that excited, but I'm pretty excited. And thanks for having me.
Yeah. Well, I'm just super excited because I know a little bit about your story and just what an incredible human being you are, as well as the culture that you've created in Imagine IT. So let's start, you know, at the beginning, you know, where you got your entrepreneurial start and, you know, how it's come to where it is now, which is this amazing team, amazing facility, and where you're a confident leader. So tell us how you got there.
Well, let's unpack that maybe one at a time, and you can cue me when it's time to move on to the next part of the unpacking. Right on. So the entrepreneurial part, you know, they say that, entrepreneurs are kind of like cursed with entrepreneurialism in their veins and in their blood. I look back at my childhood and both of my parents were entrepreneurs. As I've progressed through life, my brother has been an entrepreneur. I married a woman whose family were all entrepreneurs and still are. They run their own companies. I look over on my dad's side and both of his sisters were entrepreneurs. Even my grandfather, who worked for 3M, was an inventor who was helping create products at 3M. So a little bit of an entrepreneurial, you know, bent inside of corporate America. So I don't know that I ever had a choice. It was going to happen, like it or not. Yeah. Whether it's selling hamsters or lemonade on the street corner or t-shirts at a ball game, there was going to be some version of entrepreneurialism. So that was probably a calling. But, you know, it never starts with being on the Inc. 5000. Yeah.
And that's exactly why I love this podcast so much, because I think it's really important for people to know that the overnight success, and y'all can't see me, but there was air quotes there, it never happens overnight. And sometimes it doesn't even happen over a decade, that there's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears that are all worth it in the end, but it doesn't just even though, right? And so I can already hear people go, well, yeah, but I didn't have that entrepreneurial background. Like, he got to see people who did the entrepreneurial thing before him. Like, you still have all kinds of challenges to face.
Well, and to your point, yeah, I got to see entrepreneurs, but I got to see entrepreneurs who went on vacation and didn't get paid, because if they're not working, they're not getting paid. Like, I got to see both sides of the entrepreneur. So if anything, it might have talked most sane people out of being an entrepreneur. You know, not that we suffered as children, but it's not like we're, you know, living high on the hog and riding our boat, you know, across the ocean. There were some tough times. I mean, I remember as a kid having dad come ask if he could borrow some of our allowance to go buy groceries, right? So entrepreneurialism has its knocks, and my story is no different. Some of the first ventures at entrepreneurialism did not go well. And I'm going to segue here a little bit. There's a book that I think most of us have read at some point, if you're in the business world, by Jim Collins, Good to Great. Mm-hmm. And it's a good book. It's kind of timeless. But one of my takeaways from that, for all the, you know, listeners who have read it, are when he's talking, I think it was about Walgreens and one of the other pharmacy type companies, and they had the graphs, right? And the one graph, if you just kind of blur your eyes, just shows it starting really low and going really high. And you're like, wow, that's amazing, right? And the other company that they're competing against starts low and it kind of starts to go high, but then something happens and it flounders and it dies, right? And we all focus on the one that went high and we celebrate and we say, wow, they were great. But if you actually zoom in, because it's a 15-year graph at minimum. He didn't look at companies that were 5-year. They had to be like 15 years sustained growth. And so the graph is really kind of like condensed. It looks like it's one kind of big up and to the right. But when you zoom in, you'll see that there was massive setbacks, right? Like it went up, 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 down. And it lost like 30% of its revenue in 2 years. And then it went up, 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 down, like huge decreases. And it wasn't that they went from bottom left, upper right. Mm-hmm. It's that they recovered. Every time that they got punched in the gut, they recovered. And to me, that was a very humbling lesson to see. And I don't even know that Jim did a good enough job of really drawing attention to it. Maybe he did, and I don't remember the book. But I had to learn that as well. And so there's been several times I was kind of punched in the gut. And it isn't whether or not you're going to have those setbacks. It's how you react to those.
That's right.
And so I, you know, for the purposes of some of the audience and listeners, I'd like to share a couple of those.
Yeah.
There have been many. I didn't start immediately as an entrepreneur. I graduated college and I became an auditor at Pricewaterhouse. I learned numbers. I learned how to audit financials. I got to see other companies go public in Silicon Valley. And then I got to see companies get sued by their shareholders because their share prices were so low that there was a class action lawsuit, right? Like, so I got to see the ups and downs of Silicon Valley.
Mm.
It was fun. I learned a lot, but that's a tough lifestyle. And, you know, working 60 or 70 hour weeks for somebody else is not super rewarding. So I left. I joined West Publishing, West Group, Thomson Reuters, whatever you want to call them nowadays. Mm-hmm. But it was right before the big merger, before Thomson came in and bought West. And so there was massive entrepreneurial energy there. You know, they went from being an $800 million company to a $4 billion company in a matter of a couple of years.
Crazy.
And I got to be kind of in the middle of that from a systems, you know, change agent point of view. There were many, many meetings I got to go to just about implementing change. Mm. So a really good experience. That was fun. But at some point, there became that entrepreneurial itch that just had to be scratched.
Yeah.
And I started, co-started a fantasy football company. Like, believe it. So go back really? 15 years, like before it was a thing, like now it's a multi-billion dollar international industry.
Right.
It was really not a thing. Like people were dabbling off to the side and it was kind of this little like, you know, Dungeons and Dragons kind of a thing. Right. And so we created a website and we started to set up leagues and we were starting to get sponsorships and we were working with a statistics company to get real-time data feeds. And, you know, there's four of us and we're all doing it moonlighting. Right. So we'd get our computers together and they weren't laptops. Like we were carrying our big computers into the basements of someone and we'd be coding and writing database stuff and doing whatever. And we were all going to be rich. And honestly, if we would have played it out, it might have actually worked. But we had a setback. And the setback was ESPN came out and offered a fantasy football management for free. Everybody else was charging for it. ESPN did it for free. And we thought, crud, our whole model just broke. We're a subscription model. People have to pay a monthly fee or an annual fee for ours. We've got no revenue. We're out. Well, it turns out there's other ways to make money, right? But we didn't know that at the time. We thought that was the only way to make money. So we closed it up. In the meantime, I learned of this other organization that they worked for, my partners. And so I joined them as a consultant and later bought that company. Interesting story, right? So that company was called Manly Group Consulting. They did e-commerce and website development and things like that. But it was pre 9/11.
Mm.
And I joined the company and then 9/11 happened and the economy just fell apart and their revenues crashed. And the owner said, you know what? I've had a good run. I think I'm going to close the doors and move on. So, hey, Rich, you're our COO. How about if you write everybody's termination letter and when you're done, write your own resignation letter? Because that's kind of how that's going to go, right? Well, me and another coworker said, we kind of like this team and we like working in Minnesota. You know, how about if we just buy the company and we'll keep it going? Stupidest thing we could have ever done. the reality was, is the owner was right. The economy was not in a supportive state. We had three clients doing 90% of our business. And within 6 months, we lost all three. Literally had no income coming in. We had 11 employees. And we continued to stubbornly try to prove that we were right and grow ourselves well into six-digit debt. I'm going to say $250,000, $300,000 worth of company debt, as well as hundreds of thousands of personal debt.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Just trying to prove that we were right. There was times there where we couldn't make payroll. We had to ask team members to take a significant cut, or in some cases, literally get paid nothing. You know, we had to, at one point, mandate 38% of your salary was all you were going to get. So 62% of your salary went away. We had two employees come up and say, we know that you're not getting paid, so we would like to continue working for free as well until you can pay yourself. Like, it's one of the most humbling,
team
heart-wrenching kind of a story. Like, we shouldn't have survived, right? That who does that?
Yeah. But
what employees would offer to work for free to try to make the company succeed? And that was when you learn the power of culture. You know, we talked a little bit offline about Imagine IT's culture.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason that we've invested so much in culture here, and we can talk to whatever extent you want to. But back then, we had a good culture, and it saved us. Without that, the company wouldn't have made it.
Yeah. Can I ask real quick, how did you... In retrospect, of course, 2020 is a beautiful thing, right?
Right.
Unfortunately, only happens in the future. What were the signs that you should have quit, right? Because that's the thing about entrepreneurship is, like you talked about, like the ups and the downs and the ups and the downs, and the people who survive are the ones that don't quit. So mm-hmm. How should you have known retrospectively that you should have packed it in?
Man, there were so many indicators. It's that stubbornness. It could have been cash flow. It could have been projected revenue. It could have been any of those financial measures, as well as just sales indicators. I mean, a wise old sage who came in and consulted with us said, you got one of two problems at any given time, either operations or sales. Which one is it?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And at the time, for us, it was sales. In this particular case, they were both struggling. Like, the whole company was not doing what. The only thing we really had to go on was a good, tight-knit group that believed we could do something, right? So what made us stubborn? I wanted to succeed for them, right? Like, as much as I was stubborn and wanted to be successful and create this thing, I also wanted us to feel like we had won.
Yeah.
And during one of the darker hours back in 2006, 2007, after losing another $175,000 that year, we met a coach. You know, they say that when the student is ready, the teacher will appear.
That's right.
And not before. Well, he appeared. And his name happened to be Rich as well. And so Rich says to me and my partner, Steve, he says, I'd like to help you guys out. We kind of laughed. We're like, we can't pay you. We're not paying ourselves. We definitely can't pay you. And much like our other employees, he looked us in the eye and he said, you know what? We'll worry about that some other day. Let me give you guys some help. And if it works, great. And if it doesn't, it didn't cost you anything. The next year we broke even. And the year after that, we actually made a little bit of money because he bought into it.
He
whatever that culture was like a magnet, right? It pulls the right people in to help you out. And of course, you have to be open to it. And you have to be willing to accept the help, which many of us struggle with. But that was huge. We had another a gal come in, similar story, around 2007, 2008, right around that same time. We had met her through the Chamber of Commerce. And her husband was going through some things where she was thinking she might need to become the breadwinner. And so she hadn't previously been working. And she walks in and she says, hey, I liked your story. I would like to sell for you. And again, we laughed. We said, we can't pay you. She goes, let me go close some deals and then we'll talk about my pay.
Mm.
Yeah, okay. So we kind of told her what we do. We gave her a blank contract and said, have fun. And out she went. And just about once a week for 38 weeks in a row, she brought a signed deal.
Wow.
They weren't good deals necessarily, but they were deals.
It was cash.
We needed cash, right? And so those two angels, you know, bestowed themselves upon us during some of our darkest hours and helped us get past that setback, that downflow of the graph, right? Where you hit that bottom and go, what were you thinking? Why didn't you just close the doors right there? Well, those are some of the reasons we didn't, is people were buying in.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Mm-hmm. So that was, you know, what were the indicators? There were so many of them. It's amazing that we made it.
Yeah.
But the other question though is why did you keep going?
Yeah. Well, that was my next question is, would the rich of today in that position close the business?
I think the rich of today wouldn't have bought the business. Mm. What the rich of today would have done is let the business die because it was going to be closed amicably. And Rich would have started a new business, not put money into this dying thing. And then we would have grown it slowly as revenue and projections and sales and everything. Like, it seems so bloody obvious now. And again, I was a public accountant doing auditing. I knew numbers. I just didn't want to believe them. Or I believed myself more than the numbers, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, the rich of today would not do that all over again, which is, I guess, good. You know, in 2012, we ended up selling a subsidiary that we'd bought down in Northfield, Minnesota. And for those listeners not in the area, Northfield's a great little town, two colleges, Maltomeal is down there. You know, there's some nice businesses, but it's kind of a little quiet, little campy little town.
Yeah.
Right? You know, we've talked about how the Twin Cities is a little bit of an entrepreneurial venture and like a Silicon Valley. Well, if we're going to use the California reference, mm-hmm. Northfield is the tree hugger community. Okay. Yeah. And I love Northfield. But we bought a little company down to there. Didn't pay a lot for it. Got some employees and got some business, but we just couldn't grow it. And so after having gone through that other learning experience, we looked at this one and said, it's not doing what we thought. So we sold it. Right? We bought it and 4 years later, we sold it. We didn't really make any money, but we didn't lose any money. Mm-hmm. So I would say we learned a little bit from our journeys. But yeah, that was really challenging.
I like the mantra, I never lose, I only win or I learn.
There you go. And we learned a lot. Yeah. I tell people, I got my MBA. I just paid for it with elbow grease.
I paid hundreds of thousands of dollars for my MBA. didn't happen to come with a degree.
Really did. There's a lot of papers, but none of them say a degree on them. Yeah.
That's right. Oh, that's awesome. You know, but you really do. And, you know, we haven't really talked about the law of attraction or, you know, that kind of thing. And what people don't know about the law of attraction is that there's all sorts of other universal laws as well, including the law of allowing and, you know, the law of action. And, you know, so people think that if they believe in this woo-woo stuff, that it means that they can just sit on their couch and just, you know, manifest, just draw in millions of dollars. But there's all of these other universal laws at play. And, you know, I want to underscore with Rich, the coach, and then with the saleswoman, you also were willing to receive as well as, right? So you were, as crazy as it sounds, you were actually probably in flow, right? Because you were magnetizing people to you and to the mission. And also, you know, the importance of story. People forget that it's important to share their story and their background and why they started and what, you know, what this team means to them, because people will buy into that. And, you know, it's that, you know, people buy why you do something before they buy what you do.
Yeah.
Right. And all of that was in play. And as much as it may have felt at lots of times, like the universe did not have your back.
Right.
No, it definitely did. And now you get to share that wisdom with people moving forward, and you got to use it yourself too with, you know, your company in Northfield. So you got through it. You sort of muddled through. And when did Rich the coach come in? And I feel like I have to call him Rich the coach.
Yeah, that's, I don't want to confuse him. He came in like the mid-2000s and was kind of there. As the recession kind of kicked in there in 2008-ish, and then started to kind of drift a little bit, ultimately relocated, and we've lost touch recently. But he was with us, you know, during most of those dark times, at least to get us through that initial plateau, right? I mean, entrepreneurs, they all have that, like you're a mom and pop, and then you kind of are a somewhat legitimate company. And so we were hitting that $500,000 plateau, and he got us to the point where we could at least start reaching for the $1 million one, right? Mm-hmm. And those, in hindsight, you know, like, why did that take us so hard? Those are really hard when you don't have the right people or the right team or the right process or whatever it is, right? It only takes one or two limiting factors to plateau your business, right? And so he was there in the mid-2000s. The recession hit. And at that point, my business partner decided that for a number of personal reasons, that he and his family were going to move out of state. And we were 50-50 partners, which also meant that we were 50-50 janitors and 50-50 salespeople and like mm-hmm. whatever needed to be done.
Yeah.
We just split it up and did it. The problem is when you're in Alabama, you can't do payroll and you can't do sales and you can't do delivery. So he.
And darn it, you can't change the garbage. And if you're not going to change the garbage, you know, you're out. Well,
and so that meant that Rich, the entrepreneur, got to do it all. Mm-hmm. I got to do sales and management ops. And you think, oh, good, you got to do it all. No, no, no. I had to do it all. I didn't choose to do it all. Mm-hmm. I was left with the baton in hand, and I'm the one who had to finish the race. And so that was really hard. It caused a lot of stress in the organization. We had some employees that felt the stress, and they self-selected. We had some clients that started to feel the stress, and they started to self-select. The wheels started to fall back off again. And during that dark period of time, I got called into jury duty on a murder trial. Right? Like,
no.
And I remember looking at the judge because I could see like there was hundreds of people being selected for jury duty. I'm like, oh, who cares? I won't get picked. And then I could see it kind of playing out. And he's doing his last series of questions. And he says, are you going to be willing to serve? And I go, well, isn't it my like obligation? I don't really get to vote on this, right? And he goes, well, no, but I need you to know that. And I said, well, you have to understand that my company will likely crash and burn as a result of this. And he's like, well, are you going to serve if you're called? And I'm like, yes. I wished at that point I had said something that would have gotten me disqualified, but I wasn't in tune with the reality of what was happening. And so I got called in, and it was 4 weeks long, and it was all day. I think we got a day off here and there. But for the most part, while trying to run this company myself, I'm now completely unavailable for 8 or 9 hours a day. And looking back, I estimate that cost me about $150,000 worth of lost revenue, lost business, expenses, money I didn't have to spend.
Yeah.
I'm sure that I made $122 for jury duty. So that offset a little bit.
And they cover your mileage also.
Yeah, that was huge.
So that's $12.
Yeah. So if you take 122 and 12, I'm close. So this is now, the dark hour just got darker. I remember having a conversation with my wife, and I said, I don't know what to do. Our home income, we were now running cash flow negative. Our debt was piling up. Our credit card debt was piling up. It was not a healthy time. And we finally just grabbed a whiteboard and said, what are our options? I had a couple folks in the industry that started to approach me about buying my business, but the reality was it wasn't worth much. And even if they did it, I wasn't guaranteed a job, and I definitely wasn't guaranteed equity, which means no entrepreneurialism, right? Mm-hmm. Remember the curse? Mm-hmm. It's hard mm-hmm. to operate as an entrepreneur if you are stuck somewhere with no equity.
That's right.
And so stubbornly, I said, maybe, but let's do the numbers. So my wife and I grabbed this whiteboard, and we wrote option 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I think we had 6 or 7. One of them was bankruptcy. Just declare bankruptcy and start over. One of them, of course, was status quo. Keep working and try to figure it out. Two of them were to sell out to somebody else. And then there was a couple other options as well. And we went into this with no idea what to do. And we said, well, what's important to us? Mm. Is ownership important? Is our commute was one of the things that we were thinking about. One of the options I had would have created a 45-minute commute one way for me. And I hate traffic. So that would have been terrible, right? And so we just created all these variables and we started to stack rank them. This has got the shortest commute. This has the best equity. This has the best cash flow. And believe it or not, one option was the highest rated on almost every single thing. And it ultimately is what formed Imagine IT, but I'm missing an incredible story. If you can give me the 5-minute segue how did he get on the list, right?
Chest. I can feel the weight in my chest during that conversation. Like I understand. And I'm sure as you're listening, you've been through a low point where you're just like, is this it? What do we do? And you're just looking at all the different options. And yet you had the wisdom to go, how can we take some of our heartbreak and our pain out of this so that we can make a decision that's actually best for us? Mm-hmm. And to be honest, your lessons from, that stubborn, we're going to, those were already being learned there. Like if I take my ego out of this, if I take the pain out of it, what are our options? So yeah, brilliant. So we have to know, we have to get this next story
here. Well, and I love that you flatteringly call that the wisdom. I would say it was the desperation, right? Because none of the cash flow was flowing, whether at work or at home. And the debt was starting to become this mountain that overtakes your life. So during all of this time, when I'm entertaining these not so good offers and considering going bankrupt and considering every option I can possibly fathom and trying to recover from jury duty, by the way, he was guilty and did get sentenced to life. So we did do some good there in the world. Yeah. And I don't regret it, by the way, as a segue. One of the questions you asked earlier is, would you do it differently? Mm-hmm. Everything happens for a reason. And had that jury duty not happened, and had I not been, punched in the gut one more time, I don't know that I would have had that vulnerable whiteboard session with my wife. And I don't know that I ultimately would have seen this other option that I'm about to tell you about. Mm-hmm. So I'm not resentful about it. You just have to go with the flow, and you have to see the signs, and you've got to play them out. And so I happily went to jury duty, and I got to meet my other jurors, some of which I still keep in touch with years and years later. But the thing that happened in the middle of all of this, remembering that my clients were leaving, my employees were resigning, and cash flow wasn't flowing, I got a phone call from a longstanding customer who I had become a friend. And he says, "Rich, I have this other business that really needs your help." And I thought, oh my goodness, thank you, Lord. Even if you're not religious, you're doing some thank you prayers at this point, because I don't know that I deserved a client at that point. And I said, "Well, tell me more about it." And he said, "Well, it's an organization about 20 people, and their IT company is doing fine, but they're just not feeling the love." And I thought, okay, well, let's give it a shot.
We're very loving.
We're very loving. Well, and honestly, it's the thing that my team was good at. Mm-hmm. Is we were very passionate. We were very cultural. We were very connected, very relationship-based. And so we went and met with the client. It went really well. We gave them a proposal. They approved it. Of course, we had an inroad, so that helped. And boom, I was so thankful. Now, I want you to feel the context here, right? I think it was about a $1,400 a month deal. So it's not like all of a sudden all my problems were solved. This wasn't a deal to NASA or something where you close this two minutes. This was like, what, $16,000 a year, maybe? Okay, so
yeah,
it wasn't a big deal. It was just a big deal to me.
Yeah.
And so we closed the deal. We do IT support. And so I had to call the other IT company and say, "Hey, sorry about taking your client, but I need the admin passwords and, the other things so that I can support them. Again, sorry." And they were really cool about it. I mean, not happy, but they were very cooperative. They sent me the documentation. They did it in a timely manner. They were very professional about it. And again, I was so thankful for all of that I was kind of effusing thanks. "Wow, that was great. Thank you. Sorry, I forgot this other thing I need." Boom, they sent it right away. Well, again, being so thankful, I did something I've never done. And I reached out to them and said, "I know this is weird because I just kind of took your client, but can I buy you a beer?" And they, and you could probably just hear the silence on the other end of the email where they're just sitting there going, "This idiot wants to buy us a beer. Do you believe this? Like, he stole our business and now he thinks it's okay to buy us a beer." But they did, right? The universe provides.
Yeah.
So for some reason, their instinct said, "Well, let's go meet this guy." So I remember the meeting. It was in a little beer joint off of Grand Avenue. And it was one of the most awkward blind dates you could ever go on, right? It's like going in and meeting the guy that your wife cheated on you with or something, right? Like, it's just not comfortable. And there's two of them and one of me, so I'm already outnumbered and I'm the bad guy. And so we do the guy thing, which is you don't really talk about anything important for a while. Mm-hmm. How about those Vikings? How about those Twins? Whatever. Have a beer. And then one of the two guys, he just can't hold himself in anymore. And he goes, "How did you take this client from us?" And I'm like, "Whoa, I don't know. Well, how big are you? And what systems do you use? And how do you do this? And how do you do this?" And we started to go through the list, and we were the same size. We used the same systems. We have almost the same pricing. We had the same certifications. We both did Microsoft. Like, we could have been separated at birth companies on paper. And so we get all the way done going through this list, and he looks at me again, and he goes, "So how did you get this client from us?" And I said, "Well, if I'm being honest, I don't know, because it sounds like you actually might be smarter than me." I said, "But I can tell you this. one of the decision makers and I go way back, and I consider him a friend, and he's the one who called me. So how often do you meet with your clients and have a conversation with them on a relationship basis? And they said, well, we meet whenever they want to meet, but otherwise we just try to just do our job quietly off to the side. And I said, well, then that's how I got it.
Mm-hmm.
It was all about relationships and culture. And so we kind of started to get past that awkward dating phase,
mm-hmm.
because that was behind us, right? And at some point in the conversation, somebody, I want to say it was Mark, who was the other gentleman in that company, said, boy, it sure would be interesting if we were all together working for the same company. nervous laugh, right? And you just kind of like quiet. And all of a sudden we said, well, that's an interesting concept. I mean, if we brought the relationship piece to the technical acumen and we had our two teams working together, boy, we would have a whole different approach. This would be interesting.
We could truly leverage all of our strengths together.
Yeah. Well, and here's the reality, right? Remember, my partner left me. And so I was doing sales, ops, marketing, finance. I was doing everything. Well, they were doing the same thing, except there was two of them.
Mm-hmm.
But the guy who really liked sales, you're going to laugh, he was doing their accounting. How many salespeople do you know that like doing accounting? None?
not very many. I don't have any.
I can't think of any.
Right.
And so he's immediately going, well, so can you do the accounting if we merged? And I went, well, yeah, we're really good at that.
Yeah.
Oh, good. I remember after the merger, by the way, he had an account that said, talk to accountant. And it had like hundreds of, like, tons of money, because he didn't even know what to do with it.
Everything was marked, talk to accountant.
Talk to accountant. I have no clue, right? So we kind of started like, you know, dating a little. We'd go have a meeting. We'd talk about our cultures. We'd talk about our technologies, all while my wife and I are having this whiteboard session.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to learn about them, and I'm starting to understand that they don't want to just buy me. They want to merge and work together, which to me now checked a bunch of things off the list.
Yeah.
It would keep my employees, and I loved my employees, and I didn't want them to all get fired as a process. So going bankrupt wasn't a great option. Merging was a pretty good option, right?
Mm-hmm.
The commute was reasonable. And so we just started checking it all off, and we went, oh my goodness, we got to make this happen. And boom, a month later it happened. So in June of 2012, Imagine IT was formed by the combination of those two other companies. And it's been, you know, I want to say it's been like newlywed kind of honeymoon time.
Yeah.
It's been 7 years. We've never had a loss in any month of any quarter of any year. We don't lose clients. We don't lose employees. I mean, I'm saying above industry averages. We have a very strong culture. And it's been just amazing when you get the right people on the bus, how quickly the bus can go.
Yeah.
I'm sure I left out tons of details.
Oh my gosh, that's so good. I mean, there's a couple of things that I want to pull out of that story. Number one, and you talked about, you know, the stubbornness and you know, digging in and, you know, having this really vulnerable conversation with your wife, and honestly, a very vulnerable conversation with the potential business partners too.
Yeah.
Cause you got to come all out and say, hey, this is the reality. Like, I know we look pretty, but we've got some debt. We've got some other things. Like,
yeah,
that's a very vulnerable conversation to have.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I do think the universe brings us to our knees just a little bit to help us let go of our ego. So I'm a firm believer that ego is actually not a bad part of ourselves. It's a protective part of ourselves. And so when we feel the need to protect, when we're feeling extra vulnerable, when we have things that we are either ashamed of or feel guilty about, or et cetera, that we want to keep in the dark, we build these ego walls. And until those ego walls come down, you can't have that vulnerable conversation. So it's like building these castle walls, right? You got to let the drawbridge down, and you have to be willing to walk out of the castle without armor on. And, you know, vulnerability is, you know, if you read any Brené Brown, and I've spoken about Brené on this podcast already in different episodes, but being vulnerable is the most courageous thing of all. And so when we can have the, and this is where I saw the wisdom, right? Because the wisdom is letting that ego down. It's hard, and it doesn't feel particularly, quote, strong, but that is the most courageous thing that you can possibly do. And now, because of that, it even furthered your culture of openness, of honesty, of all of those things, because you led by example. And, you know, I was talking to a potential client just the other day, and he was, you know, frustrated. He's like, this it shouldn't be so difficult. I kind of laughed and I said, actually, leadership is incredibly difficult. You know, that there are some times where you're in flow and it feels easy, but leadership is freaking hard and it is difficult. And you have to be willing to let go of your ego so that you can truly lead your team to 7 years of month over month over month over month and year over year over year profit right. and growth. And then the second thing that I really noticed out of your story is the attitude of gratitude. You didn't have the money. You didn't have the money even to buy this guy a beer, is my guess.
Like, right.
That also went on a credit card at that point.
Probably, yeah.
Right?
And they might have paid for it. I don't remember.
Like, yes, free beer. But that's another thing. And it goes into this flow and the law of attraction, all of that, is when you're also giving out and you're calling out even the little things that you can be grateful for, suddenly the universe will give you more. And, you know, I use this metaphor of, you know, the universe sort of being this wonderful parent, right? If you've got a child and this child destroys every toy that you get them, right? Are you going to give that child more toys?
Right.
Probably not, right?
Probably not.
But if the child is grateful and takes care of the toys and all of that, then that parental, that universal parent goes, yeah, you know what? I'm going to give you more. So when you're grateful for and you take care of what you already have, suddenly abundance comes. And, you know, and then the third thing that I want to draw out is just your abundance mindset. And this is, you know, your abundance mindset, I think, is one of the things that I love about you the most, is that when you invest and you give to your employees and to your clients and you just have this open heart, suddenly the pie isn't getting sliced up anymore. It's just getting bigger.
Right. Yeah. I like that. That was a lot there.
It was a lot there.
You did trigger one lesson that I learned along the way about the leadership piece. And I've repeated this many times since, because I think people feel like once you get past this, it's just going to get so much easier. Mm-hmm. And boy, if I wasn't a half million, I was a million and I could hire that other person, boy, that'd be great. And I wouldn't have that problem anymore. One of my coaches pulls me aside as we were working through a hard thing a couple of years back. And we're like, oh my gosh, it's going to be so great when we get through this. He goes, well, you know what the reward is for solving all these problems, right? I said, well, yeah, we're done with them. He's like, no, you have a whole new set of problems to solve.
That's right.
I won't ever forget that. And I've repeated that lesson to others because to your point, leadership isn't easy. And if it was, anybody can do it. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there's going to be a time when my leadership ability is also capped. It's already been capped many times. And thankfully, through the graces of others, they've helped me break through. But leadership is hard. The decisions that we have to make are hard. You're right. That meeting, that initial meeting with those two guys, and you know, where we had to start showing financials and debt, and we had to figure out how to buy out my other partner, and we had marriages, you know, spouses had to sign off on stuff, and it was incredibly vulnerable. I wouldn't change it. It was awesome, but there was many a time in my previous lives where I would not have allowed that vulnerability to happen.
Yeah.
Right? It would have been too hard.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I think I keep learning that lesson. Yeah. You mentioned a Simon Sinek quote earlier. I'll give you another one, which is leaders eat last.
Yeah.
That's also become a little bit of a mantra. I don't need credit for much of anything.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just happy if the team is succeeding, if our company is accomplishing what we're trying to accomplish.
Yeah.
You know, if we're expanding happiness in the world, which as you know, is our why,
mm-hmm.
well, then I'm happy to let everyone else take credit for it because that means it's working.
Yeah.
But that's a lesson that I had to learn along the way. That was not the 30-year-old version of me talking. That's the 50-year-old version of me talking, right? Like,
yeah,
it's hard.
And so I'm you know, the last thing I'm wondering is, you know, as people who are listening to this particular episode are trying to dig down and maybe they're in that low spot or maybe they're in the growth spot, right? They could be on both sides, but they know that they want to grow bigger and they know they want to grow faster. What is your number one tip for those people?
It shouldn't surprise you because I think we've mentioned it about 8 times, and that is be open to help. And it's interesting you said, what if they're at the bottom or what if they're at the top? in both cases, you actually need help, because if you're at the bottom, right. You got to figure out why you're not going up the hill. And if you're at the top, you're about to have to be that cocoon that turns into a butterfly, or you are going to fall back, right? Like, no matter where you are, there's somewhere you're trying to be. And you obviously need help to get there because you're not there yet. Mm-hmm. And if you're not humble enough to ask for the help, then you can wait, but that humility will arrive, right? And so the number one tip is be open. You talked about the law of receptivity. Mm-hmm. Be open to the advice, the wisdom, the lessons of others. And then, by the way, pay it forward, because there's others who can learn from your lesson. It's one of the reasons I was interested in sitting in on this podcast.
Yeah.
To thump my chest and brag about what we're doing, because we're still battling too, right? But to your point, there are other people that haven't solved some of the things that we did or lived through some of those things. And if I can help them, great. The thing about that is you learn almost as much as you teach, right? If you really want to master a topic, it's not that you keep learning it. You actually start teaching it and you will learn it even more. Mm-hmm. And so I've become an EOS implementer for some companies. Yes. I do leadership coaching. I do peer advisory. I'm doing that to not only give back, but to also help invest in my own leadership.
Yeah.
Be open to that, I think.
I think that's so great. So I like to tell people that the pain that you've experienced, make it pay rent. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, and you can do that by teaching others in that karma that you put out in the world, teaching others how to avoid that same pain. And don't just overcome obstacles, use them.
Yeah. Good. Right? I like that.
And, you know, my oldest daughter had an accident in January where she broke 4 bones in her face, major concussion. It was really bad. And so it's been a long recovery for her. And she did it at gymnastics, and she's getting back into the sport. She's not willing to quit on that. And that's been our mantra, is don't just overcome this obstacle, use it. How can you use this to become a better version of you, to lead the other kids on your team? And, you know, mind you, she's 13. So, you know, right. You wouldn't usually look at a 13-year-old and go, wow, what a leader. But she has emerged so much stronger than she went in. And so, you know, my proud mama moment is watching teenager or preteen, you know, use a massive obstacle for the betterment, not just of herself, but also of others. And if we can use this platform here, and that was the root behind and the purpose behind this podcast, was to use these stories to help inspire people, to help them learn some strategies, to help them understand it's okay to reach out. And that doesn't mean you're weak, and it doesn't mean you're failing. It just means that you're human, and humans live in community, which means that we need other people. So, you know, your vulnerability and sharing your ups and downs, I so appreciate your leadership and what you've created. I have so much respect for. And so I'm just really looking forward to people being able to hear your story and be able to learn their lessons from it to take them to the next level.
Nice. Good. Yeah. So, yeah, you did. I guess I'll give a corollary there. If I were to do a 1B to that, you mentioned all of those people helping. If I've got kind of a success story looking back, like you said, hindsight's 20/20. And what were the moments? What happened in the moments where you kind of sprang forward, or you worked through whatever that thing was? And I think without exception, I'd have to really go back and do some soul searching. But I think without exception, it was a person. It wasn't like a technical thing happened, or it wasn't like the economy recovered. And that, like, yes, it did recover, but that's not what caused the springboard. It was because the right person arrived, whether that's an employee or a coach or a management team member or whatever it was that arrived. I remember comparing myself against a peer at one point. He was growing faster than I was, and I was jealous. And I would ask him how he was doing it. And then as I stood back and watched, he ended up getting into an acquisition mode where he acquired a company. And I sat there thinking, wow, if I acquired a company right now, first of all, I don't have the money to do it. But even if I did, I don't have the strength of a team to do that. And as I watched how he was pulling it off, it's because he made one strategic hire before that. And that strategic hire gave him the operational capabilities of bringing on big piles of business where he wouldn't have been able to do that himself.
Right.
And then he brought on an HR person who could manage all the people. And then he brought on this legal consult that helped manage. And I looked at my team and then I looked at his team and I went, well, no wonder that they're growing significantly faster than we are. They have more horsepower.
Yeah.
Right? Those people can really make or break you. And I think too many times as entrepreneurs, we either feel we can do it ourselves or we don't want to make that hard decision of letting that trusted friend maybe take a back seat or find a new career.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's another corollary lesson, you know, look at your horsepower and maybe you need some different horses in the stable. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. All good lessons. Well, I could talk to you for, I don't know, 12 hours straight and we'd be dropping all kinds of lessons all along the way. But indeed, you need to get back to, solving all the problems of the IT world. And I need to get back to solving all the problems of the strategic and culture world in coaching. So we will finally let you go, but I can't wait to do this again as you make another list and as we continue to grow in not only our friendship, but our collaboration as well, because it really is about helping Minnesota get to that next level. And it takes all of us. So thanks so much, Rich, for your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to Making the List with Alyssa Dare Nelson. If you're loving the podcast, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate, and review. Until the next episode, aim high and play to your strengths.